This talk was given by Danica Shoan Ankeley at the Zen Center of New York City. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ccnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. My name's Shoan. I know most of you here, which is really wonderful. It seems like we have a small, intimate Labor Day weekend gathering. So hello, old friends. And those of you who I have not yet met, I look forward to meeting. I wanted to speak today about transformation and how transformation actually happens. And this is, of course, not the last word on the matter. It's just merely my present moment investigation of it. And, you know, just to begin with what may seem obvious, transformation is really essential in this life because the world that we see around us is a reflection of our internal world. And writ large, the world that we see around us is needs a lot of healing. And so wherever we are in our own personal journey, we're taking care of ourselves and our suffering, but we are doing that. I think it's really important to remember we are doing that not just for ourselves, but so that we can heal the world. And that can look a lot of different ways. So, you know, to a certain degree, life just transforms us. The experiences that we have in the course of a life, how we respond to them. There's just, you know, the truth that like someone who's lived a long time can accumulate a kind of lived experience wisdom. Not always, but often. And no accident that, you know, the village elders are the ones that the community would turn to seek guidance. But there's also a way in which we can be intentional about that transformation of ourself, of how we're using our life actually to blossom, wake up. And so Zen training is about making transformation intentional. It's like a total setup for like, how do you actually do that? And part, you know, some of that is in these like small moments, maybe, certainly deeply embedded within Zazen. And then also part of our like larger life as a community. And I'm sure many of you are aware that at the monastery this weekend, it's the opening of Ango, which is a season unto itself. And Ango will open here at the temple a week from today, next Sunday. And for those of you who are not familiar with Ango, our training year in this Sangha goes in cycles that are mirroring the training the kind of the rhythms of our ancient Sangha members from past times. It's said that the Buddha would gather his disciples together during the rainy season when it was so hard to travel and to move from village to village, which was their customary way of practicing. And so during the monsoons, everyone would come together and train intensively for that period, stay put. And so we have a version of that, which is that during the fall and the spring, the Sangha comes together and collectively renews our intention to practice. and we make commitments about what that looks like in our own particular lives, and support each other and do that for a period of the 90 days, we say. So we're coming up on our fall 90-day Ongo. A huge part of Ongo is intention. I mean, a huge part of like life and living life and transforming your life is intention. And Ongo is just like a way of like taking a piece of that pie and looking at it. And intention then becomes a matter of developing a live relationship with our intention so that we're clear about it and we have a commitment to it, and we're going to be grappling with it and finding our way with it in so many moments as the days unfold. So how do we work skillfully with intention? And I wanted to kind of look at what's, if you think of intention as like planting a seed, I wanted to look at the soil. So this is like the pre-Ongo talk. The week before, like, how do we actually like get the soil rich and like composty and fragrant, so when we drop that seed in, it takes root. And to inspire myself and hopefully you, we're going to turn to three wise women to help us understand more clearly some of the ingredients in preparing this soil. And worth saying, I think, that these three wise women are all creative spirits. And I think there's a way in which in our present time, especially, it's the artists, you know, the writers and the musicians and the manifestors in all forms who are often the truth tellers. So thank you, everyone who has an artistic offering. So the space of intention, where does it happen? The space of transformation, where does it happen? From Holy the Firm by Annie Dillard. Every day is a God. Each day is a God, and holiness holds forth in time. I worship each God. I praise each day splintered down and wrapped in time like a husk of many colors spreading at dawn fast over the mountains split. Every day is a God. Each day is a God, and holiness holds forth in time. I worship each God. So our life is just this. Time. Time. Time's just a concept. Time's just an idea. So what is it actually? It is the realm of all power. In his fascicle, Uji, Being Time, Dogen writes, time is existence. Existence is time. We ourselves are time. Can we find even a shred of our personhood, our beingness that's outside of time? It's impossible. We ourselves are time. What is time? Time is just like this continuous flow, nonstop flow. In his Dharma talk last week, Shugen Roshi used a koan in which there's an exchange between a teacher and a student, and the student asks the teacher, what is the fundamental constant principle? And the teacher says, moving. There's nothing, you know, there's a million teachings in Zen that are like here, now, here, now. There's nothing outside of this. And like, we know that, but we forget it a million times a day. Any thought that we have about the past or the future is always a thought, right? It's not actually real. Like, there's nothing ever that's real outside of the present moment. And of course, the present moment's going like this. So just to say, we're in this very, like, we don't always see it that way, but we're in this very, like, magical, powerful realm of nowness all the time that has all the potential in the world because it's constantly changing. And of course, our anxiety and grief and loss comes also from the fact that it's constantly changing. So a lot of learning to be a person and be at ease in the world is learning how to release and be in that flow and grieve when it's time to grieve. And then also see, like, whoa, it's going, it's moving. When Annie Dillard says holiness holds forth in time, like, of course. Of course, the sacred is happening now, and nowness is what makes the sacred sacred. If you really look at it, it's the same thing. And if we think about our own lives and where we feel that connection with our true power or with the sacred, however you want to frame that, God, Annie Dillard, you know, she comes from a Christian background, so she uses God, and I don't mind it at all. I always find the word God sort of electrifying in its way, you know. Holiness holds forth in time. And our general relationship to time may be that there's not enough of it. Or that we're busy, 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 and we're like running from one thing to the other, and that it passes so, so quickly. I mean, that is, I've been feeling that a lot lately. But those are all at a step removed. We're not in the river of life so much when we're thinking that. So whenever we're in touch with the river of life, the divine, the sacred, God, that's always a present moment experience. That's what we're filled with. And you know, the language doesn't reach it. That's the thing, is that we're always like stumbling around the words because the language doesn't reach it. And present moment is just a phrase. But when we're the one who's lit up, illuminated, or flattened, there's another way of feeling the power of life. If we're there in a true way, it's completely present. And like, what is it? Because it's slipping through our hands even then. One of the things that is kind of incredible to me about Zen practice and Zazen is that, you know, Zazen is so many things, but in essence, it is a training of the mind to be here now, to be present. I mean, that's the instruction. Wherever we go, that we see that we've departed and that we return. That returning is really essential. Just a reminder, friendly reminder, come back. But here it is, this like, you know, whole setup and a room and robes and this and that and a tradition that's been passed down for hundreds and hundreds of years and teachers and students and monastics and the whole thing. And when we sit down to do our core practice, it's like you ring those three bells to start the period and then like nothing happens. It's incredible. You just like sit there in the midst of the passage of time. We're just like drawing a frame around what's always happening and then asking each other to clear out the extra so you can actually see it and be there. It's so like wild and beautiful and strange sometimes. I don't know if you've ever been like late to Zazen or if you're have come to session and been, you know, late to the start of a period. And so you sit outside, right? Here we have the foyer area. And at the monastery, people sit on the balcony and you can look in. And before you've entered Zazen, you know, you can have that experience of just seeing a whole room filled with people and everyone sitting so still and nothing's happening. Time's just passing. So from within that, we can begin to feel into the texture of aliveness, beingness itself, that holiness that's holding forth, that's just intrinsic. It's just how things are. The freshness of that flow, right? The constant just change, moving, means there's so much potential in it. And one of the things that we can see as we like turn inwards and use our Zazen to see our mind is that all that we're creating is an invention. And it's ours if we want and kind of refine our skill. It's ours to release. And actually, there's nothing tethering us to anything, which is a little bit of an unsettling, you know, the more we start to see that, that can actually be very unsettling, which is why it can be good to work with the teacher and have someone kind of help you hold that reality of like, okay, no, there's no self. And like you have a life and responsibilities and there's a world. And no, there's nothing that's you. Nothing. Just moving. So the powerful part of that is then, okay, so what are you going to do with that? That's why now is the realm of transformation. It's just like possible. It's possible because nothing's fixed. So how do we actually step into the flow, right? We're constantly catching on things. We're constantly departed. We're constantly preoccupied. How do we actually step into that flow? So, wise woman number two. Toni Morrison, such a pleasure to be looking at her work again as I reflect on her life and all that her creativity has given me and then given our world. And so in her book, Song of Solomon, she, I'm just going to say that the most essential for this very short passage that I wanted to use, there are two characters, main characters, Milkman and Guitar, and they are young men, and they're on this particular occasion, they're, you know, making a plan for how they're going to be rich and prosperous, and you know, they're crafting their plan, they're fantasizing, they're just talking the way that like a couple of young guys might, and walking along and talking, and they're in a parking lot and they look up and see, like, whoa, out of nowhere amidst the cars in the parking lot is this peacock. And kind of marveling over it and like, where did this come from? And wow, it's stunning. It's a white peacock with full, you know, the male with the full tail. And so being young guys, they decide they're going to try and catch it. And so they're running, they start to hustle to like catch the peacock. And the peacock is kind of running and shuffling around, and it'll flap a little bit and maybe get up onto one of the cars and then just hop right down. And so Milkman says, "How come it can't fly no better than a chicken?" Milkman asked. Guitar says, "Too much tail. All that jewelry weighs it down, like vanity. Can't nobody fly with all that shit. You want to fly? You got to give up the shit that weighs you down." So to step into that flow, what is required? What is required? And you can think of it as flow, or you can think of it as flight, right? Just that moving. Morrison is completely delivering us the teaching. You have to let go. You have to let go of everything you're carrying. And as she puts it in the mouth of Guitar, that's the great thing about novelists, right? They put the truth in through people and situations. It's not spelled out. As she puts it in his mouth, all that jewelry is weighing it down. It's like vanity, which is exactly right. As we start to see our, what is it that's keeping us from being in our actual contact with life? It's always, all of our ideas and concepts and thoughts about ourselves and the world. And how much of those could we actually cluster loosely under vanity? In other words, self-preoccupation, however you want to frame it. And you can have "I'm so great" vanity, and you can also have like "I'm nothing," and that's another kind of self preoccupation. We wouldn't typically call it vanity, but for the sake of this, it's still like extra. It's extra. Dead weight. Dita Roche used to say, "Put down the backpack." Same thing. Lose the tail feathers. And one of the things that we can start to see in sitting is, we give so much importance to thoughts, ideas, and concepts. Like, we don't even know that from the beginning. That's like what life is, thoughts, ideas, and concepts, meaning. And then you start to see like, whoa, like, what is that? Like, it's nothing. It's nothing, actually. I mean, it's something, it's got so much power, don't get me wrong, but when you actually look and see, it's empty. And so, if that vanity is taking the form, and it is, I think for all of us to some degree or another, of us trying to be someone, creating an identity, or filling an identity that we feel has been given to us, an expectation that we're trying to meet, or an expectation that we're rebelling against, but still we're in relationship to somebody's idea or our idea of somebody's idea of who we are. And we can step into a spiritual practice and just replace the old identities with the new ones. Like, now I'm a Zen monk. So we become imprisoned by phantoms, which is chilling, but we're empowering them. And so we can learn to release them. And there is a surrender there. When Guitar says you have to give up the shit that weighs you down, that is true. There's a surrender. There's a, we love that stuff. I mean, look at your, how hard it can be to let go of your thoughts in Zazen, or how attached you are to a self-identity, even if it's painful to you. We're fused on an energetic level. I think of Gollum, from The Hobbit, where he's like, "Oh, precious. it's like I feel that sometimes about like seeing myself and how I am with myself, you know, my thoughts, my ideas, my self-righteousness about nothing, you know, and then when there is some import, how much more powerful that is, how much harder it is to see where that's coming from. And so to form a true intention, we have to be able to let go of all of that extra, let go of those ideas and concepts, and to really get in touch, to really get in touch with our actual heart, our bodhicitta, our heart mind that wants to wake up, that's true. When you look at a peacock, they really do look very proud too. If you see them, you know, with that tail out, kind of strutting around. So letting go of our attachments, letting go of ourself so that we can fly and flow. And then our third wise woman. An artist, Georgia O'Keeffe. And I'm going to use her words, but in a way that does her a disservice, right? I should unfurl one of her masterpieces up here. We did a retreat this weekend on eco-printing, where you take plants and that have many plants, not all plants, but many plants have properties, pigment properties that can leave impressions on material or paper. And so we were we went out and harvested some blossoms and leaves and branches, and then created scarves with their impression, the leaves and the branches and the blossoms permanently embedded in the scarf using heat and some metallic salts and a process. But as we were working on that, say you and Ikkyo and I were kind of planning, and you know, Georgia O'Keeffe, you've probably heard this quote because she's so well known for it, and I think the reason is because it's so true. She said, "No one sees a flower really. It is so small. We haven't time. And to see things takes time. Like to have a friend takes time. No one sees a flower really. It is so small. We haven't time." And of course, Georgia O'Keeffe went on to paint flowers big and bold so you can't miss them. And when we were out gathering plants yesterday, I personally became very enamored of these little weed blue, I don't know the name. Hosui thought they're part of the orchid family, but they're a weed. They just grow around. And they're so delicate. They have these two little delicate ear-like petals, and they are iridescent blue, like metallic nail polish, but transparent, delicate little tiny petals. I was totally captivated. And how many times have I walked by doing one thing, doing another, you know, everything is basically that way. We're constantly like missing it. And it's easy to see in a flower because when you pay attention, the flower has those properties of color and form. But the same is true of everything. You know, Azafu and Zabutan are emanating their perfect aliveness, And we're just missing it most of the time. So to see things as they are, to slow down, to release our busyness, which in a sense is just a manifestation of our self-preoccupation, our vanity. I mean, it comes, you know, that's an oversimplification because the world has its demands and we have things we have to do. But that kind of self-preoccupation, I don't have time, I'm too busy, it has a tinge of that. Or I notice that for myself, I should say. So seeing, to take the time to really see. And, you know, within the Dharma teachings, this is also brought out again and again to, like, actually see things as they are. There are sutras where the Buddha is described as, well, there's one in particular, I can't remember which one, but it's like, it talks about how, like, the Buddha came home from his begging rounds and, you know, sat down and washed his feet and arranged his robes and then turned his attention to what was before him. And when we read, you know, about Zazen instruction from ancient masters, there's not a lot offered, but it's basically like, sit down and like look at, take up what's in front of you. And of course, our breath, that's like helpful instruction because what's in front of us, we can be lost, particularly in the beginning. Like, I don't know what's in front of me. Okay, so start with your breath. That's very tangible. You can find it, you can return to it. So this, seeing things clearly as they are, when it comes to intention, that turns out to be really powerful. Because we can have, you know, intention, to form an intention is very cheap. It's easy, right? But to like fulfill it and to have a true intention that you feel like committed to, that's a practice. That's really a practice. When we get caught in our usual habitual way of seeing things, we're often caught in the judging mind. For example, the Buddha gave the teaching, when you see a thing is good, do it. If you see that it's bad, let it go. And so then it's like, oh, wait a second, but good and bad, like, is that up to me? Like, am I just going to try and figure that out? And so often we get our vanity gets all mixed up with good and bad, right? So good is like what I like. Good is like what brings me pleasure. Bad is what I don't like. Bad is what's hard or challenging or difficult or uncomfortable. And so we can get really confused about like pursuing what's good and not actually seeing clearly what's before us. It's like the phenomenon of, you know, it sounds like a great idea to go out and like have some drinks with friends on Saturday night. And then Sunday morning when you wake up and you're like totally hungover and like can't make it to the temple or whatever, it's like, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Right? We're like pursuing one thing, but we haven't really seen clearly the larger picture. Or we, you know, in a moment of rage, it feels so good and self-righteous to really let the person have it and tell them what's on our mind. And then after, when we've like kind of made a rupture in that relationship and we're like picking up the pieces or reflecting on how that went, we can feel like, oh, actually maybe that wasn't so good. So I feel like part of our maturation, part of our like deepening wisdom is learning to see in a true way, like what's good, what's not good, and doing that according to a true measure, which is like, what's our basic aspiration? What do we really want from our life? Really, you know, what do we really want from our life? That's like connecting at a deep level. And then we have to be able to see, you know, you use your life and this constant flow of time as a way of studying reality. When we have an experience and it plays out this, you know, with particular effects. Like, we can learn something from that. If we do it again and we have those same effects, like, okay, maybe there's something to this. If we do it again and it has those same effects, then it's just like, we're just stubborn if we keep doing it. What isn't it like insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results, something like that. So a wise person starts to see like, oh, one moment conditions the next. By having true intention and seeing it through and fulfilling it, like I'm creating a karma there. Just as the reverse is true. So how do we see the thing before us? If you think of your whole life as a flower, how do you see in that way? That real way. We have to rest with the thing. Part of seeing is that it is our connection with the holy, with the sacred, with the divine. You know, seeing with the eyes, but seeing as in taking in, hearing, whole body and mind seeing. And that happens in time. We have to be able to ride that flow of reality and sustain our contact with it enough to take in what's before us, the flower. To let go of the vanity and the tail feathers and all of that that's obscuring our view and actually be with what's before us. I thought Trungpa Rinpoche, who's a Buddhist meditation teacher, no longer living, I thought he said it very nicely. In meditation, you are neither for nor against your experience. That is, you don't praise some thoughts and condemn others, but you take an unbiased approach. You let things be as they are, without judgment, and in that way, you yourself learn to be, to express your existence, directly, non-conceptually. If you are able to relax to a cloud by looking at it, relax to a drop of rain and experience its genuineness, you can see the unconditionality of reality, which remains very simply in things, as they are, very simply. When you are able to look at things without saying, this is for me or against me, I can go along with this or I can't go along with this, then you are experiencing a state of wisdom. That's the gap that we're offered in Zazen, or that we have to relax into. It's there, but we're churning. So how do we relax into letting go of this is for me, this is against me. I can go along, I can't go along, and just be. So as we are in our lives, you know, to really appreciate that the whole world can be our teacher. And the whole of our life can be like a sutra if we are relating to it in that way, bringing that mind that can rest, that's unencumbered, or at least sees through our self obsession and can actually be there in contact with the present. And from that very fertile ground, we have so much power. We start to see what mind is in Zen practice. And then in my experience, we start to appreciate just how powerful mind is. And, you know, with intention, I know for myself, I can get very discouraged easily. I can bring a perfectionistic mindset to like, well, this is my intention. Oh my God, I didn't fulfill it. Oh, I'm it's over. And particularly with Ango, those of you who have done Ango in the past, there's an invitation to actually make specific commitments for your life. And it's really hard to maintain those. sometimes, in my experience, it has been. Even like, you know, you're supposed to pick a concentration practice, like one thing that you're going to bring your attention to again and again over the next 90 days. And it's like hard to remember, let alone actually do that. You know, it's like you choose something concrete that just lasts a couple of minutes, like brushing your teeth. This is why I love Zen as a spiritual practice. It's like so nitty gritty. It's like concentrate on brushing your teeth for 3 months. So good. It's so good. And indeed, a universe opens up when we do that. Because of impermanence and the flow of things and just reality, like it's okay. You can like forget to do it 1,000 times and on 1,001, come back and have full integrity as a practitioner. Nothing's gone wrong. That's our freedom. To choose again and again, to see clearly what we want our life to be, to live in accord with that. And when we fall or go asunder, to correct our course and return. And then the power of a life is that those moments build, right? With intention, there's a power to in that flow of time. It's like the river that's rushing. And that is bringing our life fully. And that is the transformation. That is the path of transformation. So may we really take that up. May we support each other in that work. May we not draw boundaries around what that looks like, but really let it be expansive and include all the good. Can we continually see and ask ourselves, am I awake? Am I awake to this moment? Am I present? Am I suffering? What's the beginning? What's the source of that suffering? How do I release it? And how do I take that and share it, offer it for the benefit of all beings?
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma Talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JIZOPROJECT.